We're doing Gemara Makos. We're up to the Beis Amid Beis. And we're holding seven lines into the wide lines. The first word on the line is Ninhu. Man Tana. So the Gemara asks, who is the Tana? Who is the Tanakh opinion that holds that kufra kapara, that when we pay kofar, when a person's ox gored, so then the payment is in order to attain atonement for the master, for the owner of the ox. And that's what we said, that Edim Zomimim, they're not worthy of getting that kapara, so they wouldn't pay kofar. Amar Rav Chisda, so Rav Chisda, who was a disciple of Rav Huna, Rav Chisda, who was the father-in-law of Rava, Rav Chisda, who was a Kohen. Rav Chisda says, the Tana is Rabbi Ishmael, Bnosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokahi. It is Rabbi Ishmael, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Ditanya. The Braisa says as follows. The Torah describes that when a person's ox gored, so if it was an ox that has a history, so then the master has to pay. V'natan pidyon nafsho. The owner has to redeem his soul. He has to pay off his life. D'mei nizak. The first opinion in the Braisa holds, you evaluate the person who was killed, and that's what you're going to pay, because you have to redeem what your ox has gored. Rabbi Ishmael Bnosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer Dmei Mazik. He holds you evaluate the owner. So that's what the Braisa says, period. Who do we evaluate when we're looking to pay Pidyon Nafsho? Redeeming one's soul. Does he redeem his soul by paying off the value of the one who was killed or his own value? My love, Ba'akam Ifligi. Isn't it correct to say, my love, isn't it correct to say, Mehakam Ifligi, that this is the source of their argument? Demal Savah, one rabbi holds, the word mar in Talmudic terms is like rabbi. Mal Savah, one rabbi held, Kufra Mamona, that when we pay the kofar, when we pay the pidyon nafsho, so then the idea is you're paying off money, you're paying off the damage. It's like a circumstance where the ox damaged, so you evaluate what it damaged and you pay. Umal Sava. And the other opinion holds kufra kapara, that what you're trying to attain by paying the money is to attain atonement. The idea of the payment is really to fulfill a spiritual obligation. The first opinion holds you're paying a monetary obligation. You killed a relative, so pay the inheritors, pay his relatives the value of the person killed. So that's a very strange concept. What does that mean? The ox gored a human being. So now his wife lost a husband. Why does it help that you're going to pay? How can you call that mamona? You say, okay, what was he worth on the slave market? He was worth much more as a husband, as a father, as a son. And anyways, what monetary right does his wife have? You owe him money. The ox gored him. If you damage him, you'd have to pay him. Now you say, okay, let me pay off his wife. What are you paying off his wife? So the whole concept that the Gemara suggested here needs a lot of work.
So kapara would, how would that be calculated?
Kapara, so I understand. The Torah says the man, he needs atonement. Mm. Technically, he deserves the death penalty at the hands of heaven. So the Torah says, okay, you should at least pay up for what you did.
Oh.
So it's a form of a tax. It's a it's a way of his attaining atonement.
But we're not talking about the quantitative analysis here to figure out the damages.
No, that's a separate question. Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa doesn't accept what Rav Chisda offered. Now Rav Papa was the disciple of Rava. Rava was the son-in-law of Rav Chisda. So we advanced two generations. Amar Rav Papa, lo. No, that's not right. De kuli alma kufa kapara. Everyone holds that when you pay kofar, the idea is you're attaining atonement. But over here, their argument is as follows. The question is, when, everyone agrees your goal is to attain atonement. This isn't a monetary issue. You're paying money in order to get atonement. The question is, who am I evaluating? Do I evaluate the man who was killed? And is that what the Torah is saying? Redeem your life. Because your ox killed someone of this value on the slave market, whatever, but at least you're going to pay something for it. Or is the Torah saying, redeem your life by evaluating your own life? But at the end of the day, everyone agrees the goal is to attain an atonement. So that's why the Gemara doesn't accept this opinion.
How does this contradict the opinion we just presented?
It doesn't contradict. He's giving a different explanation in the Braisa. The Braisa says, a machlokas. Who do we evaluate when we pay kofar? Rav Chisda suggested that machlokas stems from a question. Is kofar a monetary obligation or a spiritual obligation? Okay. Rav Papa says no, it's for sure a spiritual obligation. The question here is, how do you attain that spiritual cleanliness? Is it by paying off his value or his value? But the goal is not monetary. You're paying money, but the obligation is a spiritual one. It's how do you attain atonement. It's kapara. Yeah?
But they wouldn't have different opinions about who you... does it imply that they would also have different opinions about who you would, whose value you would take?
Everyone, the machlokes and the brai says, whose value do I take?
Right.
But my kamifligi is a question, where does this machlokes stem from? So the first suggestion was, the reason that one opinion holds you evaluate the man who was killed is because we view it as a monetary obligation. And what Rav Papa is saying is, no, everyone agrees it's not a monetary obligation.
Right.
And the opinion that says evaluate the person who was killed is saying, in order for the owner to gain atonement, he has to pay the value of the person who was killed. But everyone agrees the root of the obligation is in order to attain atonement. Okay, now we have a rule. When we want to learn Gemara, we need to have a Tanakh right next to us. Preferably a Tanakh with commentaries. Or at least a Chumash. Maita mayu d'rabanan. The Gemara asks, what is the source for the opinion of Rabbanan? Answers the Gemara, Ne'emar hashata lemata, v'ne'emar hashata lemala. The term hashata is using the root lashit, shet, to place. So it says, in kofer yushat alav, and it says, kasher yashit alav ba'al ha'isha. So you have the same root, shat. Shat means to place. So in one place, the Torah describes, two people are having a fight, and by mistake, one of them punches the other one's wife. He means to punch him, but he misses. And he hits the wife, and the wife was pregnant, and he causes her to miscarry. So the Torah says, he must pay kasher yashit alav ba'al ha'isha. As the husband of the woman places upon him a tax, so he shall pay. So the Torah is describing a man paying. A baby was killed. It wasn't born yet, but the woman was caused to miscarry. And the man who punched her has to pay, and it says yashit. The husband will place upon him this tax that he will pay. Then later on, the Torah describes a man whose ox gores, and it says in kofar yushat alav. When redemption, when kofar is placed upon him, when the responsibility of paying kofar is placed upon him. So again, you have the term yushat, to be placed upon. Now, when it says that the tax is placed upon him in the scenario where he punched the woman, who are we evaluating? We're evaluating the baby that was miscarried. So, in the beginning of the parasha, when it uses the term yushat alav, we evaluate the one being damaged. So too, later on, when the Torah says in kofel yushat alav, the Torah means evaluate the one being damaged. So that's the root, that's the source for the first opinion in the Braisa. The Braisa had presented that first opinion that says you evaluate the one being killed. That's what's the owner pays. And the Gemara asked, "My tam, ayu de Rabbanan? What's the source for the Rabbanan's opinion?" Answers the Gemara, "Ne'emar hashata lemata." The term "yushat" is said at the bottom later on in the Torah, in our parsha. "Ve'ne'emar hashata lemala." And earlier, the Torah used that same root, "Kasher yashit alav bala isha." Ma lalan bedinizak, just like in the case where the woman was hit. What you're evaluating is the one who was damaged. Afkan, so to hear where the ox gored, the same term was used, so it means you evaluate the same way. Bedinizak, you evaluate the one who was damaged. So that's the source for Rabbanan's opinion. The Rabbi Ishmael, how does Rabbi Ishmael know to evaluate the man, the owner, whose ox did the damages? He says, the verse says, "Venatan pidyon nafshoktiv." The Torah says, redeem your soul. Who's doing the redeeming? The owner. Whose soul is he redeeming? His own soul. So what value is he paying? His own life's value. V'rabanan, what do the rabbis have to answer that? In, you're right. In Aramaic means yes. Ein in Hebrew means no. In Aramaic, in means yes. Pidyon nafshoktiv. You're right. The Torah does say he has to redeem his own soul. Miu, but kishayminan, when it comes to evaluating how does he redeem his own soul, bidenizak shayminan, we evaluate the nizak, the one who was damaged. You're right. The goal is for him to attain his own redemption. And now we've come full circle, meaning the Gemara is working off of Rav Papa's assumption that everyone agrees that what we're trying to do here is attain atonement for the owner. The only question is, who do you evaluate? So that brings us to the conclusion of this sugiya, that Edom Zomimin don't pay kofar. So we said the reasoning behind it is because kofar is for atonement and they don't deserve it. We asked who holds that. So Rav Chista suggested it's a machlokas. And Rav Papa says, no, there's no machlokas. Everyone holds that. Everyone holds that the idea of kofar is for atonement. The only question is, how do I evaluate it? What's the root of the rabbi's opinion? Because it says the word yashit and yushat. So that's why I evaluate the one who was damaged. What's the root for Rabbi Ishmael's opinion? That's because it says, Pidyon Nafsho, he's redeeming his own soul. Now, the Gemara used an important term. The Gemara said, Ne'emar. The word Hashata is said in one place in the Parsha, and then it's said later. So it's very tempting to read this Gemara and say you have a Gzerat Shava. We know what a Gzerat Shava is. Sometimes the Talmud says, if I have the same word or the same root or the same concept in two places, so we have a tradition going back to Sinai saying that I derive from one place to the other. That's a Gzerat Shava, right? But we have to realize that when the Gemara over here says, Ne'emar Hashata Lemata, Ne'emar Hashata Lemala, that does not necessarily mean it is a Gzerat Shava. There's a Shittah Mekubetzes in Baba Kama that says that sometimes when it says Ne'emar, Ne'emar, when the Talmud uses this type of terminology, it is not a Gzerat Shava, it is rather Limud Satum Min HaMeforash. What does that mean? Limud Satum Min HaMeforash. What it means is as follows. If I say, Daniel and I were talking earlier today, and that guy and I, well, our conversation evolved to politics. So now when I use the word that guy, who was I talking about? Daniel. Do I need a source to derive that? Do I need a law of inference to derive that? Or do I say no? That's, you just use the context. Using the context is called limud satum min ha-meforash. I derive what is not explicit from that which is explicit. Limud satum, learning out that which is satum, which is closed up. In English, non-explicit? Mina miforash, from another place where it is explicit. So sometimes what we're doing is just that. We're not really doing a limud. It's not really a drasha. And the Shlach HaKadosh, in his introduction to Torah Shebaal Peh, writes that that is the idea behind the 32 laws of derivation. You guys know what I'm talking about? That Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yossi has.
32? If you
come, 1 second.
There is
13. We know this.
So the 13 laws of derivation you're familiar with that we say every morning, Rabbi Ishmael Omer. And then there is a medrash called Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer. And in that medrash, what?
While you're looking, you gave us two concepts just now. Limud Mefarash Minas.
Limud Satum Minas Mefarash. Yeah.
One concept.
Correct.
That you learn that which is not explicit from that which is explicit.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, they didn't print from the back over here. Strange. This Gemara doesn't have it. Okay. So in many standard editions of the Talmud, you have it printed in the back of Tractate Brachos. Over here, I don't see it. Here you go. Okay. Mavo Talmud. Yeah? So you have an intro to Talmud printed in the back of the Masechet Brachos. And then after that, you have rules of the 13 laws of derivation. And then you have rules of the 32 laws of derivation from Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yossi. And it quotes you all 32 over here. Now, this is just a quote. The real 32 and how to apply them are quoted in a medrash called Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer, which we have. We have this medrash. And the medrash begins with this. Rav Lezer Yossi says, the following are the 32 laws of derivation. Ribui, miut, etc. Gematria, mashal. So the 32 laws of derivation very often are limud satum minam forash. You basically are understanding something from something else that's explicit. So over here, where it says ne'emah ne'emah, what it's saying is, you look in the same parsha. A few psukim earlier it said yashit, and it meant one thing. So that's what it means here. And then it might not be a gzeirat shava.
That's one principle, right, of derivation. Right?
Oh, so that's the question. Is it a derivation, or is that the understanding of the text? It seems to be far closer to the simple understanding of the text.
Right. So it's not necessarily the
right.
Right.
Well, the Shlo wants to say that's the machlokas Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Yossi. Whether that's that level of interpretation is called a derivation, or that's called, that's what the text says. That's how the Shlo wants to explain the machlokes. Why does he say 13 and he says 32? Because Rabbi Ishmael agrees you have the other 32. He just holds that those are a closer interpretation of the text. Okay, we'll pick up here Bezachim Sunday.